Hey everyone, this is Adam Ellenboss from Nightlight Astrology. I am out of town this week on family vacation, and so a few of my friends and colleagues, a few Nightlight alumni, are joining us this week to fill in for me while I'm gone. Alex Amorosi and Alexander Transom have been doing content for me this week. It's been really nice to have them. I'm so thankful that they could show up, and I hope you've been enjoying their work. Today, Alex is back with us to talk about some of the major misconceptions that people have about contacts between Venus and Saturn. I think you will really enjoy this talk today. So I will hand it over to him in just a second. But before we get into it, don't forget to like and subscribe, share your comments and reflections. If you have a good Saturn Venus story to share, use the hashtag grabbed or send us your story grabbed at nightlightastrology.com. You can find a transcript of any of my daily talks, including today's, from Alex in this case, on the Nightlight website, nightlightastrology.com. When you're over there, I am promoting two things today. One is the speaker series, which continues this weekend, in case you are not aware. We host a quarterly speaker series that is put on for free thanks to the success of the Kickstarter. And on Saturday, Dan Waits is giving a talk on Pluto and Aquarius. You can register for that webinar on the website. The following weekend, on March 30th, Jolly Knot is doing a talk called Delineating the Lot of Fortune. So those are great speaker series talks you can catch. If you go to the Live Talks page, you can register for April 18th's webinar that I'm giving on Uranus in Love, just before Jupiter and Uranus can join in Taurus. I'll be exploring Uranus's significations, its lesson, its alchemy, when it enters our lives with respect to the topic of love, sex, and relationships. When you register, you'll get a live link. If you can't attend live, we do send you a recording afterward. If you go to the courses page on the first year course program page, you will find information about my upcoming class, Ancient Astrology for the Modern Mystic. This is my first year program. New section begins on June 16th. If you want to join, be sure to check that out. At the bottom, you'll find some enrollment options, including early bird payment, a payment plan, and need-based tuition assistance. If you need a little help affording the program, be sure to apply for the need-based tuition assistance. And I will be promoting that program in depth starting in April. Herbal Foundations Apprenticeship, as you guys know, I've been promoting Ashley's program, which begins at the end of April. On April 24th, it starts. If you go to skyhouseherbs.com and go into the courses page, Herbal Foundations Apprenticeship, you can learn more about the upcoming apprenticeship program at the bottom of the page. Again, payment options, including need-based tuition and early bird enrollment prices. So be sure to check those out. And at the end of today's program, like I've been doing for a few weeks now, there is an interview. If you haven't yet watched it, be sure to stick around and learn more about the program through this interview that I did with Ashley, which tells you all about it. On that note, I will hand things over to Alex, who is giving us an explanation about the things we really tend to get wrong, major misconceptions that we have about the pairing of Venus and Saturn. So with that, I hope you will enjoy.
Hey, everybody. This is Alex Amorosi. I am in today on the news desk for Adam Ellenboss. He's out on vacation. So I am going to do this video for you on Venus's conjunction with Saturn in Pisces. We're going to talk about five misconceptions about Venus and Saturn in general. We'll throw in a little Pisces in there. We'll sprinkle a little Pisces on there. But it'll be really fun. It's always fun when Adam gives me the keys and says, drive. And I'm like, well, you're giving a Leo rising Sag Sun the keys. So God only knows where we're going to wind up, huh? So before we start, let's get to the time-honored traditions of a Nightlight Astrology video. Press the like button or whatever verb or action or James Hillman story you would like to tell about the like button. I didn't realize like there was some kind of like creative contest about the like button, but it's been hilarious to see on Adam's Instagram what people are coming up with. I didn't realize it was a thing until that started to happen. Like and subscribe. It helps the channel to grow. If you're interested in getting to know more about Adam's work, his classes, etc., you can go to nightlightastrology.com. If you're interested in learning about Adam's wife Ashley's herbal apprenticeship, which is beginning in April, you can go to skyhouseherbs.com. And I think that's all I'm supposed to say. There may be more, but who knows? And then for me, if you'd like to get to know me a little bit more, if you'd like to do some work with me, my website is www.alexamorosi.com. You can find all the information on my services on that website. I am not only an astrologer, but I'm an intuit and an energy worker. That's actually what I did before astrology for many years. I've done that probably, about 11 or 12 years now. So one of my most popular services actually is a combination astrology and intuitive reading, where we kind of bounce back and forth between your chart and my hits. I'll tell you the impressions I'm getting, and then we'll look at the astrology, and we put it all together, and it's a really fun, often like some. I've been astounded by some of the detective work we can do together in one of those readings to bring out what is looking to be healed or seen or known. It's really, really fun and can be really, really profound. So that's the information to begin. By the way, making these videos, like sometimes I'm like, how does Adam sit down and do this 5 days a week? Like, it's not as easy as it looks, even for a Leo who's just sitting here at the camera, right? But let's talk about today. Venus's conjunction with Saturn. Now, before I get to my list, let's actually look at this conjunction. So you'll see on this chart, I have not figured out how to take my asteroids and Chiron out of my transit chart. So for those of you that don't use asteroids or Chiron, I invite you to open your heart and your mind and your soul to the asteroids and Chiron. And if them being there is really a lot, then I get it. It's kind of a lot to look at. But we'll just focus on Venus and Saturn today. So I use about a 3 to 5 degree range or orb for these kinds of conjunctions. You see Venus just pulling into about 5 degrees with Saturn around March 16th. Remember, Venus is in Pisces, her exaltation, she's very strong. This is one of the most powerful positions for Venus in the zodiac. Now, Venus starts moving towards Saturn. She's around 3-ish degrees by about March 19th. She hits the conjunction with Saturn on March 21st, thereabouts, passes Saturn, and is moving out by about 3 to 4 degrees by March 24th and fully out of range, really by March 25th. But what's really interesting about that is just as Venus is passing out of a 5 degree range to Saturn or orb to Saturn, we have that lunar eclipse coming through in Libra. Now, I'm not going to get into the eclipse today. There will be plenty of videos, I'm sure, on that eclipse. But it is really significant, I think. And one thing I'm noticing about the astrology of, mid-March through the end of April, there are a lot of interrelated patterns that are happening. Some of them I'm going to talk about in the videos I do. I'm sure Adam will talk about them in a lot of his videos. You're going to see a lot of content on that. But that's the general time frame. So we're looking at something around March 16th to about March 25th, if you're giving a 5 degree orb. And that's going to be a really interesting period to watch for. And I think, so let me back up a little bit. When we see this, especially if you know astrology, right, you see this coming, there's certain things that come to mind. There are certain misconceptions, there are certain fears. And I think that, as I was saying before, there's a real tendency in astrology to basically start to think about the transit not only from shorthand but from the worst case scenario, right? I don't know if I said this in a previous video that I've done but we tend to take our anxiety onto the transit. Or we tend to take, if we have catastrophic thinking, I come from a long line of catastrophic Italians, we tend to take that onto the transit, right? So we start to bring in all of these conceptualizations that can feel really scary, especially when a planet like Saturn is involved or Uranus is involved or Pluto is involved. Our mind can run to like, oh my God, really fast, right? So what is the number one misconception about Venus and Saturn? You already know it. I know you're already thinking about it. If you know Venus and Saturn at all, you're already thinking about it. It's the end of my relationship. It's the end of relationships. It's a relationship's just going to blow up everywhere around me. Oh my God, relationships end. That's possible. That is possible. But one thing that I've noticed with Venus and Saturn in practice, is Venus and Saturn tends to be more about the end of a form of relational style. So what does that mean? Whether we're in relationship with someone else or we have our own patterns in relationships, we tend to relate in a certain way. We have the patterns that we've picked up from our parents. We have the patterns we've picked up from our models. We have the patterns that we've picked up from our family, from the world, our expectations, all of that. They serve us sometimes, and sometimes they don't. What Saturn does a lot of times is it forms a kind of gateway. It forms a crucible that confines you in a little bit and says, is this really how you want to relate? Is this pattern of relating in a relationship actually working? You know, even in our long-term relationships, it's very common that we go through phases in that relationship. We go through the dating, you know, dating honeymoon phase, and then we go through the getting serious phase, and then we go through the commitment phase, and then we go through the, you know, the shifts and changes that we go through as we get older, and we start to change and shift, and our lives change and shift, and we have to recreate the relationship on some levels. Those are all Saturn qualities, right? And it's really interesting to see what happens in your thoughts and in your emotions as Venus starts to approach Saturn from this standpoint. It might be something like, you know, I've always related to people with a certain pattern, and I'm now starting to realize, whoa, that just doesn't work. I have to do something different. I may have been being immature in some ways in my relationships. I think all of us in some way relate in a childish manner in our relationships as we're growing, because we sometimes there's parts of us that just haven't been healed in that way. So we look at, Where do I have to make more mature decisions in my relationships? Where is it time to really feel like a grown-up in my relational style? And sometimes what Saturn does is it does put up a roadblock, or you can feel when Saturn, you know, there's a Saturn archetype activated, there's a roadblock. And one of the questions I always encourage my clients to ask is, why is that there? What is it about? What's the transit asking of you? And with Saturn, a lot of times it's something about making a mature decision. It's about growing up. It's about letting something go. And especially in Pisces, you know, Pisces is the very end of the zodiac. There's often a wistful nostalgia in Pisces. And sometimes it can be a little bit like this, right? You know, I don't know why I keep seeing Amy Adams in my head when I'm thinking of this example, but I'm seeing Amy Adams. And at the end of a movie, she's looking at a photo album. Oh, and she's thinking about like the past, and oh, it was wonderful. And then a little tear comes down her cheek, and she closes the photo album. She puts it on the table. She picks up her suitcase and she goes out the door and she starts some new chapter of her life. There's something that has to naturally end in order, not only that you just create a new beginning, but that you free yourself from patterns or energetic ties that have held you in the past. That's a really nice way of thinking about this sort of, oh my God, things are going to end. It's like the form may end. The relational pattern may end. And usually what it's asking for is some sort of growing up, maturing, those sorts of ideas. All right, let me check my list. What's number two? Hardships with Venusian ideas, hardships with, you know, relationships, sensuality, sexuality, money, things we find pleasurable, beautiful. That can be one thing. But one thing that's really interesting about hardships, right, is this feeling like, okay, it just comes along. It's just, you know, we have this conceptualization sometimes, you know, it's like Saturn comes along and says, it's just going to be hard. But I, again, asking yourself, what is this asking of me? What is it asking me to do? And in Pisces, if we turn this, maybe it's asking us to commit to something rare and beautiful. Venus in Pisces has a feeling of being sort of rarefied and on high, and the precious jewel. And I've seen this with people with Venus in Pisces, particularly when Venus rules the ascendant. So it's they're a Taurus or a Libra rising. They often have to work with like boundaries with other people, and like because people kind of want a piece of them in some way, or they like there's even physical boundaries, like, you know, they'll put their hand on their shoulder and they don't want that. There's a feeling with Venus in Pisces, like it's a beautiful jewel and I have to sort of maybe, you know, on a shadow side, I really need to possess it. But on a light side, it's like, I appreciate this beautiful, rare, precious thing that has come into my life. And there might be a sense with Saturn of, I need to commit to that beautiful thing. I need to see what happens when I go all in, and making good discernments as we do that, and checking our choices as we do that, and checking our patterns, of course, always our discernment. But, you know, when beautiful things come into our lives, when rare things come into our lives, they're precious. They're so incredibly precious. And, you know, in Buddhism, one of the ideas I always love about impermanence, which always sounds like a bummer, right? Like, well, anything that begins comes to an end, right? It always sounds like such a bummer. But impermanence really makes us value things. And we can recognize that every precious gift that we have, every precious gift in some way is going to change. You know, I've watched that in my nieces and nephews as they've gotten older. It was such a precious moment when they were a certain age. All of a sudden, oh my God, they're like people. You know, now they're going to college. Like, what's happening, you know? And when we can recognize, you know, that's Saturn at work, the maturing, the aging, the change. But each stage of whatever it is, whether it's a person, whether it's a beautiful thing we have, whether it's a beautiful, you know, even just like a beautiful painting or whatever, at some point, all of that is going to move out of our lives in some way, shape, or form. And it's going to change in some way, shape, or form. And there's a way where we can just be so present with, I'm so grateful and I'm committing to being here with this beautiful thing because I realize how valuable and precious it is. And that, you know, I just really get the sense of that as I get older and as I watch, you know, the young people in my family get older, I just really see that. It's just like, this is precious because they're going to go on with their own lives and this is all going to change and it's all going to be different. So I'm going to really enjoy this time that I have with them, or I'm really going to enjoy the time I have with my partner right now, or I'm really going to enjoy the beautiful painting I just bought. All these things are because they can be seen as rare and precious, and we really commit our attention to them. We really commit our hearts to them when appropriate. There can also be, with Venus and Pisces, a little bit of the shimmer and a little bit of the a little bit of like the radiant light that might blind us sometimes. That is something to look out for, but really thinking from this light, committing to the beautiful things, committing to the rare things around in our lives can be so beautiful in so many ways. Really recognizing the impermanence Saturn represents, even though we think of Saturn as structure, it really represents the ending and change. And how that focuses us right into the present moment. I just want to be here for all of this. All right. Now, blocks, number three, misconception, blocks to love and pleasure. Sure, that can be true. People who have a strong relationship with Venus and Saturn in the chart often have a difficult time letting themselves have fun or letting themselves enjoy things, or they feel guilty about enjoying things, or they feel like, you know, that's frivolous. I shouldn't, you know, my enjoyment isn't valuable in some way, or I'm not allowed to. There can be a lot of those ideas. But, you know, if you think about a transit not just being physical around you, but highlighting certain patterns, highlighting certain ways we think, this can be, with Venus and Pisces particularly, places we block, we unconsciously block, or we don't believe that pleasure, sensuality, beauty is something that is pure or spiritual enough. A lot of times with the Virgo Pisces axis, there's a lot of questions about purity. Is it pure enough? Is it right enough? Is it in Pisces is a little more spiritual purity. And recognizing, you know, we might start to recognize during this transit, if we start looking at our thought process, we look at the patterns that are happening around us, we look at the, you know, the inner healing work that we're doing, there might be something where we're like, wow, I have a pattern of believing that it's not okay for me to have something beautiful in my life, or love and relationships are frivolous in some ways, or believing that, you know, it's not spiritually pure to desire to have something beautiful or rare. And just checking that. Now, it could absolutely be in your value system that that's something that you believe, and there's nothing wrong with it at all. But I think transits are a wonderful time for questioning. They're a wonderful time for highlighting. They're a wonderful time for looking at and being curious. Curious Professor Sagittarius here. What is this coming in? Why is this showing up for me? What's it asking me to do? What's it asking me to question? What's it asking me to, what assumption is it asking me to question? Yeah. Now, okay. Beautiful things being taken away. That's number four. Form is conception. Beautiful things being taken away. Because, you know, it's like I had it and oh my God, it got taken from me. Possibly. But here's something I've been thinking about lately a lot in my own life. And I hope this is helpful as a turning of that idea. Instead of beautiful things being taken away, taking responsibility for beautiful dreams. So Pisces, if there was ever a sign that was the dreamer, it's Pisces. If there was ever a sign of the imagination, it's Pisces. If there was ever a sign of like grand cosmic spiritual vision, it's Pisces. And Venus and Pisces, beautiful grand cosmic visions, beautiful dreams, beautiful ethereal qualities. Saturn might say, it's wonderful to dream. It's great to have all these beautiful ideas. Now take responsibility for them because they're important. And it can be very easy in Pisces to sort of leave things in the ether. And there are maybe there are some things that are supposed to stay in the ether, you know, but I think that Saturn comes along in a transit like this, or Venus approaches Saturn in Pisces. And Saturn says, you know, if you have a beautiful dream, take responsibility for it. If you have something that you believe is going to bring beauty and grace and a feeling of preciousness and shimmer and shine into the world, all kind of Venus and Pisces ideas. By the way, are all you Venus and Pisces just loving the way I'm describing it? You're also rare and precious and mysterious. But, you know, but if you have something like that, take responsibility for it. Bring it into the world, concretize it in some way. You know, our dreams are wonderful when they're kind of floating around, but when it's possible in our lives to say, you know what, I'm going to take responsibility for that dream because that dream was handed to me. That dream was given to me. That dream was put in my psyche, and it wasn't just put there to just torture me with its unmanifested form. I can take responsibility for the things that are necessary to caretake that dream into being. That's a very Saturn way of looking at this idea. If you're looking at Saturn, you know, the gateway of Saturn, and, you know, from the ancient thought of Saturn being the boundary between the oh my God, where are my words today? The boundary between the heavenly and the earthly realms. Saturn comes in towards us and Saturn goes out away from us. And sometimes Saturn is bringing things into form and sometimes Saturn is taking things out of form. And this might be a time where it's like, I need to bring something beautiful into form. I need to take responsibility for my dreams. My dreams are a precious gift that have been given to me. And I need to take responsibility for them and help them come into the world, right? Be the midwife for them to come into the world. All right. Now, the fifth misconception is falseness in relationships. Remember, Saturn rules opposition, negation, falseness, pretense. Again, that's a possibility, but let's turn it. If we turn that, the fifth misconception becomes being true to our relational values. This might be a little bit of projection, but in my early life, where I always got into trouble in relationships, whether they were friendships, but especially romantic relationships, was when I didn't know and I wasn't true to my relational values. I didn't know what was important to me. And I didn't know how to stay true to that and stay solid within the values I held for myself that would allow me to come into congruence and compatibility with another person. It took me many, many years, over 10 years of work to even get close to that and really settle them. And I think that there can be, with Venus in Pisces or Pisces in general, again, the dream, the desire to see something that maybe is or isn't there, and the desire to even, you know, conform reality to the dream rather than taking the dream and conforming it to our values. And so sometimes, you know, how many of us have had the vision of how we thought a relationship should be? You know, we saw this person, we said, oh, they're the shimmering rare thing, you know, all that. And we're not compatible for whatever reason, or it's, you know, really not a good relationship for us. But we try to conform ourselves because we are conforming ourselves to the dream we're holding in our mind, not necessarily to the reality that's in front of us. And so if we invert that and we take it back inside of ourselves and say, where am I not being true to my relational values? Or how can I be more true to my relational values? How can I hold to those? How can I be steadfast with them? Not uncompromising on the things you need to compromise on in a relationship, like, you know, sometimes the peanut butter jar stays on the counter sometimes, but the big stuff, the big ticket items. And when we are congruent with ourselves, that's a very Saturn-like process, excuse me. There's really a feeling of, maybe this is bringing short-term inconveniences. Like, for instance, you know, if you're dating, it's like, okay, so I'm meeting some people that I used to be able to sort of make myself think that would kind of work, but you realize now it's like, no, they're actually just not compatible. When we're congruent inside of ourselves, we feel more stable inside of ourselves, Saturn. And then we're able to draw the beautiful image, the beautiful dream through that set of values. And then amazing things can manifest. So those are my lists, my friends, of that is my list of Venus and Saturn in Pisces, misconceptions. Comment below, you know, put other ones that you believe are out there. I like to stand up for Saturn where I can. I have a very strongly placed Saturn in my birth chart. And I do believe in the beautiful qualities that the planet brings us. And I've had some rockin' Saturn transits over the years too. And I do find that Saturn asks us for congruence. Saturn asks us to kind of put our money where our mouth is. Saturn may ask for, especially with relationships, you know, take a look. Where are you being false with yourself? Where are you not in congruence with your own values? What's important to you? And I think with that, there comes, you know, we that's how we start to take responsibility for our dreams, how we take the amazing beauty of Venus and Pisces, the shimmering beauty of Venus and Pisces, and we take it down into a concrete, actionable form and have responsibility for the beautiful things that we've been given, the beautiful gifts that we've been given. You know, I've count myself lucky that I have so many of them to be grateful for. And that's something I'm really considering during this transit for myself too. So I hope this was helpful, friends. I hope that it gave a different look at Venus and Saturn. There's a lot of other angles we could have gone with. These are the five that came to mind for me. I will be doing several other videos to check out while Adam's on vacation. I'm going to be doing one on the, or have done, I don't know when these are coming out, but have done one on the equinox and also one on Mercury's retrograde in Aries in April, which is a pretty power-packed retrograde. So I hope you are all well. Enjoy this transit, and I hope to see you soon.
Hey, everyone. Thanks so much for sticking around. I'm really happy to be joined by my wife, Ashley, who is an herbalist. Hi, Ashley.
Hey.
And yeah, I'm really excited to be helping Ashley promote her upcoming program, which is something that you actually began teaching many years ago, this herbal apprenticeship program. I think it was, 2011 or 12 that it got started, right?
Right. Yeah. Yeah. So it's been over 10 years I've been offering this course. And yeah, it's my favorite thing to teach.
Yeah. And just to be clear, because some people on my channel, most people know you because you pop on here or there. We talk about herbs and astrology. There's an attraction in our marriage and an attraction in the subject matter that is old. Like we've been together for, you know, 14 years in our relationship going on. And we've always had a fascination with each other's areas of expertise. And we've done lots of things to marry them together over the years, in addition to literally getting married. And and actually, herbalists and astrologers have married the subjects of herbs and planets together for thousands of years as well. Now, your program is focused on, you know, herbalism. It's not an astrology course, but there is certainly a lot of overlap in terms of the energetics and the spiritual approach to herbalism that you take. And so I was hoping that we could start off just by telling people a little bit about the program. You're coming to this after taking a little bit of time on maternity leave. Our kids were not yet in school. Now they are. You're coming back to work. This is really exciting. The new program launches at the end of April. I'm going to put it up on the screen so people can see it. You can find it at skyhouseherbs.com. Enrollment is open now. The course begins. You go under Courses, Herbal Foundations Apprenticeship at the end of April. Tell us about it.
Well, this course, I guess my goal in redesigning the apprenticeship course that I've been teaching for 10 years is to make it even more personal and to allow people to study the material, digest it at their own pace. So what it's going to be is a combination of kind of three main parts. The first one is the recorded material. So there's going to be modules that will be released and people can listen to them as they, you know, as they have time. The second part are live classes where we will meet live on Zoom and talk about the module, I'll answer questions, I'll give even more information about it. And then the third part is the sacred plant pairings. And so I've always taught the herbal portion, like the plant diets, one at a time, but this year I'm going to do it in pairs because I think you can learn a lot by comparing and contrasting herbs. So for every module, you'll have two herbs to study and you'll get a little cheat sheet about them before you start the module. And then you'll have an opportunity to work with those two plants and blend them and keep them separate and just really work with them closely. Because my goal is that I want people to be able to find information that they can really use in their own lives, maybe with clients, whether they have a professional herbal practice or maybe they're a therapist in a different field, that they'll know these plants so that they can work with them really comfortably.
I love the different modules that you have, just so we can preview them for people. Module 1 is Vitalism and the Heart of Herbalism. Module 2, Building Your Home Apothecary. They're so diverse. I love Module 3 is my favorite, Plant Spirit Medicine, Energetics and Chemistry. You have such a holistic approach. It's what I've always loved about your teaching. You'll teach about the doctrine of signatures. You'll talk to people about how to communicate with plants, how to think of them as teachers that are living beings, that have personalities, that aren't just, you know, phytochemistry or whatever. But you will also teach phytochemistry. And I think that you have this really well-rounded way of helping people be intelligent about the plants, about the body, about the systems of the body, but also not afraid to use energetic systems, not afraid to take something from the kinds of energetics that ancient mystics were working with, whether that's the elements or whether that's, you know, some of the overlay with things like Ayurveda, Chinese medicine. You take what's useful on a symbolic and energetic plane and on a personal connection level with the plants, and you marry it to really smart scientific research. I think that that's rare. You don't see that a lot.
Well, thank you for saying that. Yeah, to me, it's all language. They're just different languages that we talk about the same thing. And I think the more diverse our languages as herbalists, the more we can reach more people. And that's kind of my goal. Like, I want everyone to like be able to identify plants, use plants. So we need to diversify the languages we speak so we can talk with our physicians, so we can talk with a therapist, we can talk with a mystic, right? We can talk with children. And we have a language that everyone can use.
You talk in the program, in your modules, you have stuff on digestive and gut health. You have stuff on detoxification, colds and flus, and, you know, dealing with virus seasons. You talk about tissue states, and you're talking about how to give things to your kids for, you know, helping them maybe at times even relax before bed at night. We use a lot of different things with our kids. I love this, that you have called this a... I'm going to find the phrase where you use that you use, and I'm going to mess it up. A community herbalist. What is a community herbalist, so that people can understand that definition? Because sometimes people might look at a course like this and think, gosh, unless I go to an accredited university for, you know, 8 years and learn all about chemistry, I have no right or business suggesting herbs to people or using herbs. That's just not true. And that's not the history of how folk herbal medicine has been used or taught. So what do you mean when you say community herbalist?
I think you said it perfectly. This is the people's medicine, and our grandmothers and great grandparents used plants as medicine. There's nothing actually that like hard about the practice of herbal medicine. It's just getting to know the plants and getting to know the times when they're most useful. I really envision that this course, people can take it and yes, use it for themselves, number one, because I think a lot changes when we have the personal experience, and then using it in your family, whether that's just, you know, maybe making a tea for your dog, or, you know, if you have kids, or maybe you just have a partner, maybe you have plants you can use, and we'll talk about taking care of a garden, but using it for yourself, for whoever's immediately around you, and then taking it beyond that, because it's likely that at some point, you're going to be talking with someone. They're going to say, oh, you know, I've got this digestion thing and I've tried this and this. And they might say, hey, you're studying herbs. Is there anything that you would recommend? And you know what? You'll probably have a few ideas. And that, you know, you never know how one way that you help someone out there in the world might trickle and then help others and more people. So I think through the self-knowledge and studying this knowledge in your own body, it'll naturally, it's like, you know, impossible for it not to spread out and start to affect the broader community.
Yeah, I think that's really important. This is also for that reason, because we have a vision. I mean, you guys know through my Kickstarter, you guys helped us build a community herbal medicine garden that Ashley's been hosting free and donation-based events out of, that the donations go back to right back into the garden and just growing the medicine that we then find ways of harvesting and giving to other people or letting other people come and harvest. We have a vision, we always have, back to the days when we had our yoga studio in Maryland, we have always had a vision of making this sacred knowledge accessible to people. And that is both there in this program in terms of the way you're framing what it means to be an herbalist. It might mean that you're a professional and you see clients and you could continue beyond this program developing the skills to do that. This would certainly set you up for success. You could also go forward and be someone who uses what you know with friends and family and yourself. And that's an incredible set of tools to have. The program's also very accessible from both a programming standpoint and a price standpoint. I'll take you back over and show everybody. The programs, the modules are pre-recorded, but then you meet outside of the modules for discussion, community, Q&A, and sort of development and integration. So people can attend those live. If they miss those integration sessions, they can also watch the replays of those. So
absolutely, yeah.
Anyone could take this at their own rate, you know, as slowly or as quickly as you wanted to really soak it in, or blaze through it. And, you know, and then we can certainly beyond this program, as Ashley perhaps makes more advanced programs available as she's easing back in out of maternity leave, can help you with further development or recommend you to many other wonderful programs where you can continue your studies. We want this to be accessible. We want community herbalism to be, you know, as simple as being able to show a friend a couple of yoga stretches. We should be able to show each other herbs, you know, and just, hey, this is a helpful herb to use. Also, accessibility price-wise, we have an early bird enrollment and we have a standard enrollment. And then we have tuition level one assistance and tuition assistance level two, which break out the affordable tuition into different levels of affordability. And you can kind of identify where you're at if you're someone who wants to take this program, but needs to work within your means and not hurt yourself doing it. And then for those who can pay, we ask that you use standard or early bird enrollment. And that's the same thing I do for all my astrology programs. So we try to keep it super, super accessible. The Herbal Apprenticeship Program starts April 24th. I know Ashley's super excited to be getting back into teaching too. I also would like to offer Ashley just a chance to tell everyone a little bit about, before we end here this interview, tell everyone maybe a little bit about your own background, who you studied with, what your influences are, and just anything else you want to say before we cap it off.
Ooh, okay. well, I think, you know, I started off as a kid playing in the woods, mixing perfumes and potions. And then I went on to study environmental science, where I studied organic chemistry and restoring native wetlands. And really from an environmental perspective, that's how I got into herbalism. And then after, you know, I realized after working on the restoration piece and joining a lot of earth advocacy groups that the problem's not with the earth, but with the people not mm-hmm. understanding the value of the earth. So then I started going into holistic medicine. I graduated from University of North Carolina, Asheville with a degree in interdisciplinary studies. And I went on to get my, that was my undergrad. And then I got my master's from the, Maryland University of Integrative Health. It was then called Thai Sophia. But my teachers there, you know, I had such a great blend of teachers, really scientific minds, like Simon Mills from the UK and Kevin Spellman, who is like a chemistry genius. He's also an Ayurvedic practitioner, studied with Dr. Vasant Lad, Matthew Prisco, medicine maker from Galen's Way out in California. So I had a really wonderful, diverse variety of teachers in that 3-year full-time master's level program. And then after that, I went on to study with Matthew Wood pretty intensively because I liked his energetics. I liked the way he spoke about the plants and his personal experience working with low dose, drop dose medicine. And he has had amazing, he's done such amazing work herbally with just using that method. And I've got a lot of herbalists in my basket.
David Duke comes to mind.
Jim Duke, Margie Flint, Rosemary Gladstar is like, I've only done one herb walk with her, but it was amazing. So, you know, I have shelves of herbal books and people who I just adore. And yeah, I just feel really grateful that I've had that blend of the science and the energetic herbalism and the traditional herbalist perspective as well. And I try my best to blend them together and to give everyone a really diverse yet integrated herbal studying experience.
Yeah, absolutely. You get that. That is exactly what you'll get if you sign up for Ashley's program, which I encourage you to do. If this is the kind of thing that interests you, you won't regret it. It's a fantastic course with someone I absolutely love, obviously, but also like a really, truly fantastic human being and teacher of plant medicine. And if you want to learn more about her, see her work, get to know her a little bit, check out her YouTube channel, Sky House Herbs, where she publishes weekly on plant medicine, plant energetics, and also on Instagram, which is Sky House Herbs. So the apprenticeship program starts April 24th. I wanted to get Ashley on, brag about her program, turn you guys on to it. Thank you so much for being here. And I'm sure that we're going to see some people from the Nightlight astrology world getting introduced to you and all of your magic.
I would love that. Thank you.
All right. Take it easy, everyone. Bye.